this gentleman hosted a TV talk show that, well, like you, I used to come home and watch after school every afternoon. Was on at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, some places 4:30, depending on where you lived around the country. Here in the St. Louis area, it was on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for, I guess, almost two decades. And now he is looking back on his more than 20 years in TV. At the time, well, I'm going to read you what they say about him in their press release. He was the Babe Ruth of daytime television, setting all the records for longevity, number of guests, over 25,000, ratings. At one point, he was averaging 20 million viewers a week. That's better than most primetime shows do now. He had five Emmy Awards and lots of other awards through the time. He was named Entertainer of the Decade for the 70s by the TV industry. Ladies and gentlemen, the man who stood in front of asterisks for two decades on TV, here's Mike Douglas. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. And thank you so much for that. That's more than I deserve, really.
No, it's not. No, you know, and, you know, I'm not kidding when I say I used to watch you every afternoon when I came home from school.
And we were 90 minutes, do you remember?
I do remember. You had 90 minutes. Now, the show that I guess I used to see was not live, but you actually did the show live. Is that right?
Did the show live in the market where it emanated.
So if it was Cleveland at the time, it was there.
We were live in Cleveland.
And then you moved it
to Philadelphia. We were live in Cleveland when John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Wow. Now,
live on the air.
Now, what happened?
You talk about drawing from every experience in life to... We had 28 minutes left on that show.
Did they keep you on the air or throw it to the
news
department?
Oh, they kept me on air locally. But thank God we were able to tape for the rest of the country the last 28 minutes because I did something because I am not the most religious man in the world, but I've been the same faith for all my life, and I said, would you all bow your heads in prayer, please? And they did. It was absolute silence on the air. And we prayed.
And what did you fill up the other 20 minutes with, Mike?
Well, we had guests like Robert Weaver from the housing development. He came out. People were all just absolutely dumbfounded. They were stunned. They couldn't speak. It was the most difficult moments of my life that I ever remember.
I bet.
And I've had dreams like that. I've had terrible dreams. I've done so much live television. Dreams going cross town in New York is one of them in a cab, you know, where people are actually walking faster than the cab you're in. Things like that.
Yeah.
To have something like this happen for real, it was terrifying.
I bet. Yeah, while we're talking about government and politics here, we'll talk about some of the celebrities who were on your show, and there were so many of them for so many years. Let's talk about some of the other politicians. Yeah, you had Ronald Reagan on the show. You had all sorts of people. Reagan, as I recall, came on and tried to be a lot more entertaining than most other politicians, didn't he?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we were taping in San Francisco at a big, I can't remember the name of the place, but it's like a big open stage and a lot of seating capacity. And Reagan was then the governor of California. I remember Jim Nabors was the co-host, and I went backstage, and he was standing there with Jim. And I said, Governor, can I ask a favor of you? We'd like to enter, and you know what trucking is? You remember how the step where you put your one finger in the air and you truck?
Yes.
And he said, I don't know. And I said, it's simple. I said, and I showed him the step backstage. I think I could do that, you know. And we trucked out on the stage. I have photographs of that. It's unbelievable.
You also had other political leaders.
Seven presidents on the show.
And many other controversial people who were not in government.
Malcolm X, Martin Luther King.
Tell me about...
Chicago 7. You name it, we had it. Jimmy Hoffa.
Tell me about Malcolm X.
Well, I'll be honest with you. A lot of the things he said, I was in total agreement with. But you certainly couldn't say it in those days because he was a highly controversial person. And he was a fine, fine gentleman. I mean, he handled him. And he actually, as you know, short time after that, admitted that he was going to be killed or assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it was coming. And it was inevitable. And a very courageous guy. Way ahead of his time, as you know.
What I always liked about your show, Mike, is that it was truly a talk show. You would have guests like these on, along with celebrities who wanted to promote whatever they wanted to promote, and you would actually sit there and talk to them about whatever the issues of the day were, and you didn't shy from that.
No, I did not.
Did you get pressure from the other TV stations or your syndicator to maybe not have somebody on?
No, because they believed in me and they trusted me. And that's a very important thing. They had trust in me. They knew I had good taste, that I wouldn't do anything that would turn anybody off. And I was open about it. You know, I said, I know there are people who have different opinions. And I know that I'm probably alienating 50% of my audience, this kind of thing. And I was very honest about it. But it's here, folks. It's happening. I want you to know about it.
One of the things that was different about your show was you did not have a co-host like an Ed McMahon or Andy Richter is now for Conan O'Brien. You would have celebrities come in and co-host the show
exactly
for the week, which I'm sure at times was a great safety net for you because they could bring their friends on.
My, was it ever. Because sometimes, you know, doing a talk show, sometimes you get guests that are absolute stiffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can be huge names. Picture people who really are playing other roles in their life constantly, and they're really... I remember one day I was interviewing this lovely black lady, and she got around to saying her husband was Robert De Niro. And I said, what's he doing now? She said, he's in your audience. I said, are you certain? Nobody even knew who he was at the time. And because he had so many different... He looked different in every movie, and mm-hmm. it was difficult to... And he walked up, and I asked to invite him up, and he came up. So difficult to interview this man. So difficult. I mean, I thought I could handle anything. And I just finally had to say, thank you so much for being here and get out of it. But it wasn't good, and I'm the first to admit it. But it wasn't entirely my fault. He had never appeared on the talk show and had no intention of ever appearing on the talk show.
And, you know, even today when you see him appearing on a talk show, he's still a terrible interview.
Oh, yeah, he's tough. He's tough.
Yeah.
And I've had also dreams about that. bad ones you remember.
Absolutely.
They show up in your dreams always.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you interview enough people, you're going to run into some stiffs. And I'm nowhere near the total you are, but I have a lot of people on my show, too. And there are times when you block out 20, 30 minutes for a guest, and you're 3 minutes into it, you realize, well, this is going absolutely nowhere.
I've had it happen with huge names, and I know all of them. I remember all of them.
Who were some of your best co-hosts? And leave John and Yoko out, because we're going to get to them as a separate thing to talk about.
The best co-host I ever had, I'll be honest with you, was Ray Charles.
Ray Charles.
Oh, this man. And I guess being sightless, the other... Your hearing becomes more acute, and your mind just works better than the average person. And he would ask, you know how you plan an interview, you start here and you end up way up there? He had a way of asking a question. He you know, there were no cue cards for Ray Charles.
Right.
And he would ask a question was so profound, so wonderful, and I'd say, it made me so much better that week. I had to really elevate myself and get up there with him. He was fantastic.
And when you would bring in co-hosts like Ray Charles or anybody else, you would allow them to invite a couple of guests on the show, right?
That's right. That's what happened with how we got Burt Reynolds. It was the first talk show we ever did. We had a guy named Doug McClure from the Virginian show
mm-hmm.
who was on the show, and when I asked him who he liked to have on, I remember because I was at the meeting, he said, I'd like to have Burt Reynolds on the show, and everybody was almost like in unison. Everybody said, who's Burt Reynolds? Nobody knew who the devil he was. He had been on a couple of Gunsmokes and a Riverboat and this and that, but nobody knew the name. Burt Reynolds was so fantastic on the show. He was hysterical. He did physical shtick and everything. He did everything imaginable, and he was marvelous. And later, after I got to know him quite well, he co-hosted the show, I sent him the tape of that on his birthday because it was the first talk show he'd ever done.
Mm-hmm. I bet in the 60s and 70s, Burt Reynolds became more famous for doing talk shows like yours and The Carson Show and others than for some of the horrible movies that he was doing at the time.
And I could never, you know, I was a good friend, and you said something that really struck a nerve with me, because I got to know the people that surrounded him. And one night I asked this fellow, who shall remain nameless, I said, why do you allow him to do these awful movies? We were at his house. We had just seen a screening of Paternity. And I said, David, why do you let this man do movies like this? He's capable of doing so many wonderful things. He turned on a movie once, you know, that Jack Nicholson took and won the Academy Award.
Which one was that?
The one that they filmed in Boston with, I believe, with Shirley MacLaine.
Terms of Endearment?
Yes, that's it. He turned that down.
Wow.
He was number one in the box office. He was the first one they asked.
Mm.
And Jack Nicholson took the role and won an Oscar.
Let's talk about that week with John and Yoko, which is kind of the legend has kind of been renewed because VH1 ran it a couple of years ago, and now
and it's out over the market. It's available.
Right. Video cassettes are available right now, and people are buying up tons of these. Tell me about having John and Yoko on the show. I guess it was 1972.
I think it was a little later than that. I might be wrong, but you know how it all happened. He called. He called our studio and said, I'd like to co-host the show and bring my wife along. And I thought, upon meeting him, he was very, very far out at the time. He was on another planet at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is going to be a staring contest. And actually, it wasn't. They liked me and respected me and wanted to do the show. And the interesting thing was, it took us 5 weeks to get that week. Because they could only do one show a week for five consecutive weeks. Otherwise, it would conflict with his recording. He was doing an album.
Uh-huh.
And they came down once a week. And it was quite an experience, because when we asked him who some of his friends were, who he would like on the show, he said, quote, the Chicago Seven. We all laughed, because we thought he was joking.
Mm-hmm.
He was not joking.
No.
So we had the Chicago Seven on the show.
Abbie Hoffman and the whole gang?
Including his lawyer. You remember him, Kunstler?
Yes, William Kunstler, yes.
They were all on the show. Oh, my. And we had to spread that out. But it was an interesting... I'll tell you, I've never been through anything that's been more interesting than that.
Now, I don't recall the show nearly as well as you do, because you were there, and I only saw it when it originally aired. But did Yoko sing?
Yes.
Oh, no.
You'll pardon the expression. Forgive me for that. But she made sounds. Let me put it this way. She made sounds.
Yes. You can't say to your co-host, knock that off, can you?
I should have said it to her. But quite honestly, she was not nice with the staff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, being very honest. She rode them rather hard.
Wow.
And... other than that, she was very charming with me. She wouldn't try it with me, but she did it to my poor staff. And she literally had people in tears, some of the girls in tears.
Did they, as guests on the show, push you into doing topical subjects as in addition to the Chicago 7 as guests and as topics on your show?
No. They were open about telling us who they wanted on the show, but we couldn't get everybody they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We did get the Chicago 7.
Wow. Let me ask you a couple other things that are in my memory from the show. And in fact, somebody yesterday afternoon, Frank, our afternoon show host, asked me if you were doing live commercials on the show.
At the very beginning, I was doing live commercials. That's all in the book.
Yeah,
And I was working for, and I'm not ashamed to say it because it was a lot of money at the time, I was getting $400 a week when I started the show. Now, mind you, the show was local at the very beginning, and it went into syndication very quickly. But it was local. Now, I did every commercial by myself, you know,
mm-hmm.
and every day. One day I went to lunch with a fellow friend of mine from he had an advertising agency, a guy named Mark Wise, and he said, you know, your show is a premium show. And I said, what does that mean, Mark? He said, we throw the rate book away when people call for commercials. I said, really? I said, you're saying they make up numbers. He said, oh, anything they ask for, they get. And he said, the prerequisite here, he said, one of the contingencies, is that you do the commercial. That sentence changed my life. I called. Here I am, a local guy in Cleveland. I called Don McGannon, the head of Group W, head of the broadcast. And I was he was my mentor. He thought I was Peaches and Cream. It was just wonderful. And I said, Don, can we talk? Can you come down and see me? He said, how are you? And I said, I'm unhappy. That was the key word, in case you ever want to make a new contract. Of course, you have that great ratings to say that.
Yes.
I said, I'm unhappy. He said, I'll come down. He said, I'll be down tomorrow. And I caught holy you-know-what from everybody at that station who had any kind of a job. But regardless, he came down, and then when I called, I said, when they answered the phone in New York, they said, yeah, who's calling? And I said, Mike Douglas, who's on the phone like a shot. And he came down the next day, and he tore up the contract in my office with my wife sitting there and me sitting there. I said, "What do you want?" I said, I want to own part of the show. I said, "You guys are making a fortune off of these commercials. I'm doing the commercials. I'm getting nothing for it. I'm paying you." And I said, "Don, please." I had two daughters in boarding school, this kind of thing. Then we had the youngest daughter 13 years after the twins. So, and I was working every night, any place I could work in Cleveland, just keep bread on the table. And it all changed after that meeting. It was quite wonderful.
Gave you a nice chunk of change, huh?
Yes, indeedy.
Yeah, the commercial that Frank remembered was a commercial I guess you were doing for Polaroid. Do you remember doing live Polaroid commercials?
Oh, I remember that distinctly. And I also remember doing Alpo dog food. They had the most involved way of getting a free can of dog food or some dumb thing. And they got reaction that they could not believe on it.
And that's
when I knew that I had that ability to sell.
And did some of these commercials not work, like the Polaroid picture not come out or the dog not want to eat the dog food?
Oh, no. Thank God we didn't have anything like that. I'll never forget that on the Carson show. When McMahon put the dog food down, the dog sniffed it and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And Carson came over and got down on his hands and knees, pretended he was the dog,
yes.
Panting.
Another,
oh, my God, I'll never forget that.
Another moment from your show that I got to ask you about is Ali and Frazier, who were probably the two greatest self-promoting boxers in the history of the game.
And I had one on each side, and they stood up and got into a... I thought it was just that they were going to shout at each other. And Ali said, "I'm the greatest," and Joe Frazier. And finally, they one of them swung, and I got in between them, and he hit my wrist. Are you still there?
I'm here.
He hit my wrist, and my watch came unclasped, and it looked like a hula hoop around my arm, spinning, you know. And I finally got them apart, and, you know, they are big people. These are large people.
Yeah.
And my producer came in on the break and said, "Are you out of your mind? Why, you can't stand, like, you can't take a chance like that." I said, you're the one telling me this, got me doing all these crazy things, telling me I can't step into you. He said, "You almost got killed." I said, "Well, I'm not going to do it again," but I had to stop him.
So that
was an act, you know, but one of them did swing and caught my wrist.
That's what I was going to ask you. Was it an act, or were they really going
at
it?
Frazier hit me on the wrist.
Yeah.
And believe me, it spun around. My watch spun around, and I finally... I was more interested in saving the watch, which was my first experience with a Rolex watch, and I thought it was going to go flying into the audience or something. And I finally got them apart anyway, and I saved the watch.
The book is called I'll Be Right Back, Memories of TV's Greatest Talk Show. Mike, I could go on talking to you forever here.
Oh, I certainly appreciate your calling me, and it's been fun. And you've let me speak, which is wonderful.
Well, I try to look at it the same way you did. If you have a good guest and they have good anecdotes, just let them go.
Exactly.
And I appreciate your time, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
I hope so.
Thank you so much. Mike Douglas.
Thank you.
The great afternoon talk show that was on for more than 20 years in the 60s and 70s and up until about 1984. And the book is full of memories of that show, and we can only go into a few of them here in these 20 minutes. It's called I'll Be Right Back. As always, you'll find a link to it in the Heard on Harris section of my website, harrisonline.com.